Hello and welcome to The Top Story, a podcast with headlines of the day from our correspondents around the world. I'm Tian Yu. Coming up in this edition, US President Joe Biden and his predecessor Donald Trump have each secured enough delegates to become the 2024 presidential nominee. Haitian Prime Minister Ariel Henry has declared that he will step down as soon as a temporary replacement has been announced. And the Israeli military says it has struck Hezbollah military infrastructure on the Syrian front. We begin with the Americas. U.S. President Joe Biden and his predecessor Donald Trump have each secured enough delegates to become the 2024 presidential nominee. The results in Georgia, Mississippi, and Washington state were essentially a foregone conclusion, as Biden and Trump had already disposed of all primary challenges. The election features the first U.S. presidential election rematch since 1956. Meantime, Donald Trump is asking for a delay of his hush money trial in New York. He wants the proceedings, scheduled to begin later this month, to be put off until the Supreme Court reviews his claim of presidential immunity in a separate case. Analysts say Trump's legal challenges could help sway the outcome of the presidential race. Hendrik Sabrandi has details.
Donald Trump clinched the Republican presidential nomination, but his path to the November election may be anything but smooth.
I think Donald Trump is in a huge amount of legal peril.
Legal expert Doug Spencer with the University of Colorado Boulder says four current criminal cases, together with financial penalties already imposed on Trump in civil matters, represent a big threat to him both personally and politically.
There's really not one area of the criminal justice system or civil justice system that's not going after him.
Three of the cases have already experienced significant delays. The fourth, a New York trial, is set to begin March 25th. As of now,
these things really do feel like they're being slow walked, which is unfortunate for, I think, everybody, except perhaps Donald Trump.
Ian Farrell with the University of Denver believes most of the cases against Trump are strong. He thinks delay is probably his best legal strategy.
If this was any other defendant, especially if it was a poor person of color in the criminal legal system, all this would have been done months ago and not in the defendant's favor.
Trump has a strong incentive to delay. He'd likely move to get rid of his two federal cases if elected president. He'd also prefer not to have a case proceed to trial or conviction before the election.
What happens once a case starts is it moves from kind of this theoretical specter hovering over him.
To Joshua Wilson of the University of Denver says something much more real and concrete to voters, those who haven't made up their minds already.
Yes, I expect this to be a close election and expect information like this to potentially matter significantly in the outcome of that election.
A number of variables remain. Will a prosecutor be removed from the Georgia case for ethical reasons, possibly scuttling that trial?
In a normal world, the chances of her being removed would be next to zero.
Will the Supreme Court rule Trump is immune from prosecution for certain acts he committed as president? And if it rules he's not, will a Washington, D.C. judge go ahead with a so-called January 6th trial right before the election?
I don't see that she'll have a change of heart for some reason because it's September.
Voters hoping to get some clarity from these legal cases prior to casting their ballots may be out of luck.
It's already incredibly messy, and I think it will continue to be messy. I would, at this point, be surprised if any of them were concluded before the election.
The Trump legal landscape will likely stretch well beyond it. In fact,
there's nothing in our law that prevents somebody from serving as president in prison or jail.
Safe to say, it's an unprecedented time for this country.
That was Hendrik Sabrandi on how Trump's legal woes might impact the course of his race to the White House. In Haiti, Haitian Prime Minister Ariel Henry has declared in an online video that he will step down as soon as a temporary replacement has been announced. His resignation follows weeks of gun violence and chaos in the Caribbean nation. The Caribbean Port Services terminal in Port-au-Prince has reopened after Haitian security forces regained control. Dan Collins reports from Lima.
The embattled Haitian Prime Minister, Ariel Henry, announced his resignation on Monday. Haiti's leader of the last 3 years said he would step down once a transition council had appointed his temporary replacement. The The 74-year-old Henri, who is in Puerto Rico and unable to return to Haiti, called for a peaceful transition.
I'm asking all Haitians to remain calm and do everything they can for peace and stability to come back as fast as possible for the good of the country.
His exit follows an emergency meeting of the Caribbean Community Regional Political Bloc in the Jamaican capital, Kingston. Gangs warned of civil war in Haiti if Henri didn't step down.
We are pleased to announce the commitment to a transitional governance arrangement, which paves the way for a peaceful transition of power, continuity of governance, an action plan for near-term security, and a road to free and fair elections.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken was at the same meeting in Jamaica on Monday and said his country would up its support.
Given this increasingly urgent need, I'm announcing today that the United States Department of Defense is doubling its approved support for the mission from $100 million to $200 million. And that brings the total U.S. support to $300 million for this effort.
Blinken also announced $33 million in humanitarian aid. The UN says around half of Haiti's 11 million people do not have enough to eat, and 1.4 million are starving. Ariel Henry became Haiti's acting leader in 2021 when Colombian mercenaries assassinated the country's president, Jovenel Moïse. But Henry's government was widely viewed as corrupt and also illegitimate because it repeatedly failed to hold elections. In a last-ditch effort, Henri managed to secure a UN-backed task force of 1,000 Kenyan police officers to bolster the country's security. But the move came too late, as gangs who have waged war on the civilian population using sexual violence and murder took control of much of the capital, promising, quote, genocide if he did not step down.
That was Dan Collins reporting on the latest turmoil in Haiti. The World Food Programme says Haiti is fast running out of supplies following months of widespread gun violence. The organization says it cannot get food to where it's most needed. And more than 4 million people on the Caribbean island are food insecure. Jody Jacobs has more from the United Nations in New York.
In a briefing on Tuesday here at the United Nations, the World Food Programme warned of mass hunger in Haiti that could lead to more unrest. The Caribbean country has for months been marred by gang violence, which has increased exponentially this week. Given the security risks, the WFP says it has become extremely dangerous to move food into some communities.
I'm ringing the alarm bell because you have this baseline level of hunger that's already very high, and this is worsening things even more. So what we're seeing is an increase in violence. We're seeing an increase in population displacement with 15,000 newly displaced people over the first weekend of March.
Speaking to reporters via video conference from inside the WFP warehouse in Port-au-Prince, Jean-Martin Bauer says once the stocks behind him run out, they won't be able to replenish it as all the ports of entry are blocked by gangs.
The number one is we need security. With this insecurity, it's hampering people from doing very simple things. In Haiti right now, taking your kids to school, going to the supermarket, going to work, all these things are extremely risky. You need security to come back to the country. I need to make sure that you understand that security is important, but it's not a case of guns or butter. We actually also need to focus on feeding the people in Haiti.
The UN says that the capital is surrounded by armed groups and the city is, quote, under siege. It's unclear how warring gangs will respond to the announcement that Prime Minister Ariel Henry is going to resign. The Security Council mandated multi-support force is yet to be sent to Haiti, and the UN Secretary General has urged member states to deploy the force sooner rather than later. The Security Council has condemned what it calls the destabilizing criminal activity by the armed gangs and reiterated its calls for the perpetrators to be brought to justice.
That was Jody Jacobs reporting from New York. Turning to the Middle East, the Israeli military says it has struck Hezbollah military infrastructure on the Syrian front. This came on Tuesday as Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon exchanged another round of fierce fighting. Concerns are growing that those tensions could erupt into a bigger conflict. Meanwhile, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says Israel will press forward with his military campaign into Rafah. David Biller with the Associated Press reports from Jerusalem.
We saw more than 100 projectiles fired from Lebanon by Hezbollah into Israel. It was one of the heaviest assaults since the war began, and Hezbollah said that it did hit Israeli military positions. These airstrikes killed two and injured another 20 or so. And Hezbollah, fired rockets in the afternoon, throughout the afternoon, and Israel, launched airstrikes on those launch sites. Hezbollah has said that it will cease its assaults on Israel if there is a ceasefire in Gaza. But Israel's defense minister just a few weeks ago said that even if Hezbollah were to cease its attacks, Israel would keep on going against Hezbollah in Lebanon. So, it underscores the concern that the northern border of Israel and with Hezbollah in Lebanon could erupt into something bigger. For the time being, things remain peaceful, despite the fact that in past years, entrance into Al-Aqsa has caused clashes with Israeli forces. But things are calm for now. Right, a 19-year-old soldier, Itai Chen, was pronounced dead by the Israeli forces. And they said that he actually died on October 7th, just outside Gaza, while protecting civilians. It was believed that he was one of the more than 250 hostages dragged into Gaza on October 7th. This came as a blow, first and foremost, to his family, but also to U.S. President Joe Biden. Chen was an Israeli and American citizen, and his brother and father had both met with Biden. Chen's parents also issued a statement. They're obviously, gutted by this news. Israel has repeatedly pressed Hamas for a list of living hostages in Gaza, and Hamas has refused to provide that. Of the more than 250 taken, more than 100 were released in November, and then roughly 130 are believed to still be in Gaza, although Israel believes that more than 30 of them have been killed.
That was David Biller reporting from Jerusalem. In China, a mainland spokesperson has condemned Taiwan's Democratic Progressive Party authorities for evading their responsibilities in the handling of a fatal boat collision. The spokesperson made the remarks in reference to the incident that saw two mainland fishermen drowned and killed on February the 14th. Meantime, Chen Binghua also lashed out at the so-called Taiwan independence. Zheng Yibin has more.
On a press conference on Wednesday, the Taiwan Affairs Office of State Council once again slams the DPP authorities' ways in handling the fishing boat incident that happened on February 14th, saying they are trying to buy time and get away with it, and this is totally wrong.
Since the incident, neither the victims' families received an apology nor have they been able to get the truth. The Taiwan side is still using the so-called investigation procedures to delay the settlement, and the so-called law enforcement to shirk responsibility. They're heartless, unrighteous, and unreasonable.
The spokesperson said if the Taiwan authorities sidestep the problem, the mainland will take further steps to solve the problem, and all consequences will be borne by the Taiwan authorities.
Only when the DPP authorities gave up the secessionist stance and stop colluding with external forces can they bring peace and tranquility to people from all walks of life in Taiwan, including servicemen.
Chen Binghua makes clear again on the mainland stance to resolutely crack down the so-called Taiwan independence and curb interference by external forces. When asked about the so-called international waters in the Taiwan Strait mentioned by the U.S., the spokesperson said there are no such waters in there.
Both sides of the Taiwan Strait are Chinese territory, and China enjoys sovereignty, rights, and jurisdiction over the strait.
During the press conference, the spokesperson also said the mainland will unswervingly advance the progress of the national reunification and safeguard the fundamental interests of the Chinese nation and people on both sides of the Taiwan Strait.
That was Zheng Yibing reporting. Finally, to the Russia-Ukraine conflict. Local authorities in Russia's Belgorod and Kursk say Ukrainian attacks have injured at least three people. Meanwhile, armed soldiers claiming to be Russian citizens fighting for Ukraine have made cross-border incursions from Ukraine into Russia. Russia says its forces repelled the attacks and inflicted heavy losses. The alleged incursions took place following an overnight drone attack carried out by Ukraine over several Russian border regions, causing fires at some oil refineries. Magumi Lim has more from Kyiv.
The Freedom of Russia Legion, the Siberian Battalion, and the Russian Volunteer Corps, paramilitary groups that are reportedly made up of Russian citizens fighting on the Ukrainian side, claimed on Tuesday they had made cross-border incursions into Russia. The incursions come ahead of the Russian presidential election set to begin Friday, and a spokesman for the Freedom of Russia Legion said this was only the first day of their operation and that more, quote, interesting things were yet to come as the elections draw near. The group claimed to have occupied the village of Tyotkino in Russia's Kursk region bordering Ukraine and posted an unverified video of some soldiers fleeing across a field. Ukraine has said that these groups were acting independently, though the move is widely seen to be backed by Kyiv. Russia's defense ministry claimed that it had repelled the group's attempts to break into Russia's Belgorod and Kursk regions, saying the incursions took place simultaneously from three directions. The incursions followed one of the biggest Ukrainian drone attacks against Russia to date, targeting oil refineries. According to Russia's defense ministry, 25 Ukrainian drones were shot down over regions including Moscow, Leningrad, Belgorod, Kursk, Bryansk, Tula, and Oryol. Regional officials said fuel facilities in the Oryol and Nizhny Novgorod regions caught fire and that a drone was shot down over the town of Kirishi, which is home to Russia's second largest oil refinery.
That was Megumi Lim reporting from the Ukrainian capital. Recapping today's headlines, U.S. President Joe Biden and his predecessor Donald Trump have each secured enough delegates to become the 2024 presidential nominee. Haitian Prime Minister Ariel Henry has declared that he will step down as soon as a temporary replacement has been announced. And the Israeli military says it has struck Hezbollah military infrastructure on the Syrian front. And that's it for this edition of The Top Story, a podcast that brings you world headlines every weekday. For more news in politics, business, sports, and culture, you can subscribe to The Beijing Hour, a one-hour podcast news magazine program. We welcome and appreciate all ratings and reviews. I'm Tian Yu. Thank you for listening.